People are thirsty, you know? Yeah. It's like my husband jokes, he's like, you're the woman whisperer. Anywhere you go, someone kind of it's hears true. What you do. And
they're like,
he's like, and
it.
Then I don't yeah. see you for the rest of the night. So I don't know where you go.
My husband will be like, I walk by and all I hear is the word vagina. And he's like, oh, Jamie must be talking to them about like pregnancy or trying to get pregnant or whatever it may yeah. be.
Welcome to Uprising. Each episode looks inside what it takes to lead the most dynamic and successful cultural movements. Some of them in the business world, some in the social realm, some in politics, and some in between. To see why people start uprisings. What gives those initiatives momentum and keeps them going? And most important, what lessons can you learn from these movements and how to apply them to your business and even personal life? Let's explore the secret to sparking movements that move people into action.
Passionate ideas.
Controversial ideas.
Uprising ideas.
The power is now in the hands of anyone.
To start a cultural movement.
Your movement.
To move the world.
Welcome back to Uprising. It's 2017. And it's a beautiful day here in New York City, and for the first show of the new year, we wanted to meet Janie Noffman and Shiva Talibian, who founded the Truly MD movement. And they actually work a lot with New Beginnings, but they also work with healthcare. And both of those are relevant right now because we're at the beginning of the new year, of course. But also, there's great changes afoot in healthcare in the United States, again. So welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
It seems that many of the best and most passionate creative thinkers who created movements have really interesting backgrounds. You know, can you tell us a little bit about where you guys started and kind of how you got to where you are?
Sure. So this is Shiva. I will start. I am a physician and I am first generation. My father went to medical school in Iran and then came here in the late 60s to be a physician. And my father's an OBGYN and I followed in his footsteps. For many years, I didn't think I would do that, but I did. And I also trained as an OBGYN here in the States. And then I specialized in reproductive endocrinology and infertility. So I am currently a fertility specialist here in New York City.
I have a similar path, minus that my dad's not an OBGYN. He's actually a psychologist. But I also trained as an OBGYN. I actually... I'm a couple of years younger than Shiva. I've known Shiva for most of my life, and I sort of followed in her footsteps. I trained in the same residency program, trained in the same fellowship program, and now we are colleagues and partners in our fertility practice, and together we started Truly MD.
Do you have a moment in time where you guys kind of met up and said, okay, there's something about this other person that just motivates me. We got to change the world? Or was it just everything totally accidental?
I think it's probably a combination of both. I think we have very similar passions and we treat patients and sort of view healthcare, particularly women's reproductive care in a similar way. And I think that we wanted to take the message that we give to patients and sort of the way we believe patients should be treated and take that more nationally or
universally
to other women. So we sort of had this, I guess, light bulb type of idea together, and that motivated us to move forward with Truly MD.
Like if you go back in time and you think about the things that you share in common, say the point of view on the world and so forth, was there something that happened between the two of you or in your lives independently that you felt made you who you are?
I think what's in my blood is just this inherent satisfaction that I get from helping other people. It's just, I always knew that whatever career or career path I would take, it would involve me being the giver. For me, that is very fulfilling. It gives me a purpose every day. It's sort of like at the end of the day, I can put my head down and I feel like I've accomplished something. And so I think as a physician, it's a very natural outlet to become a physician if that's sort of your desire, if that's what fulfills you, if that's what drives you. I mean, everybody has something different that drives them, and everyone, you know, thinks of success, personal success, in a different way. But for me, it's that I feel like I've had a successful day if I've been able to just do one thing that day to help somebody else. And so I think as a physician, that's a very, you know, it's a very natural career path. And I would say, I don't want to speak for you, Jamie, but I feel like you have that same drive,
I think,
and motivation, yeah, in your career.
I think to go all the way through medical school, through residency, fellowship, you have to be motivated. And obviously we're both intensely sort of motivated type of people. I think that the impetus to be a doctor and the impetus to start Truly was a little bit different. I think Truly more came out of wanting to make education accessible for all women about, specifically about reproductive issues, but take that education and almost demystify it and deliver it in a colloquial way so that anyone could sort of understand what infertility meant or preeclampsia meant or hormone replacement therapy. So it was accessible.
Right.
And I think for me, it was becoming a physician, sort of taking care of patients and seeing that there was a lot of bad information being disseminated, a lot of care that was very questionable. And then I have two daughters, and I think the having two little girls, you sort of really start to think about women's rights even in a whole other way, and really empowering women to change their bodies or to know what's going on with their bodies.
Right. Right.
So you launched this revolutionary idea, Truly MD, which is a women's healthcare movement. Let's use that term for now in a macro context. What was the impetus behind launching this?
I think it was a confluence of factors. I think it's having daughters, and I think taking care of women every day,
yeah,
and having them come to us and say, wow, you're the first person who ever told me this.
Mm-hmm.
We really had this aha moment. Like, we take for granted, we assume that women understand their ovarian physiology. We assume that women understand that at some point it's just your body's too, your eggs are too old,
yeah,
to result in a healthy pregnancy. And so many very, very educated, accomplished women who just don't understand some of the basics of their body. And, you know, I think you go out there and you try to read, and things are dry, they're medical, they're technical. And so I think the impetus to start Truly really came personally. It's just something we're passionate about and it's easy for us to talk about. But we also had a lot of patients who said to us, you need to put this out there for people who live all over the country who don't have access to you on a day-to-day basis like I do.
Mm. And I also think we were seeing women who were smart, I mean, top of their careers, like very well educated, who were not asking the right questions to their physicians and were sort of going in this sort of route or almost robotic way of receiving treatment. And we would be like, why did you not ask about that? Or why did you allow someone to do that? And so that was also behind it, wanting to give evidence-based information, which is sort of medicine. One of the big, you know, doctrines of medicine is evidence-based medicine. So we wanted to take evidence-based medicine that how it should be practiced and disseminated to women, and actually give them the information that they need to ask the questions to change their path.
Do you think women that you've met, once you intervene with them, are thankful? Do their minds immediately open up? Do you find that it's almost like you're lighting a candle every time that you meet a different woman?
I think so. I think they're appreciative to have the information, to have the knowledge. And I also think it's interesting, in fertility medicine, obviously we mostly see fertility patients. There's a lot of blame that women put on themselves, a lot of blame and a lot of guilt. And I think as women, we often blame and have guilt, whether it's, you know, working and raising kids or, you know, in many ways, but there's a lot of blame in the fertility culture. And I think by giving women education or real answers to what's going on, you can help remove the blame and remove the guilt. because it's not because you decided to go for a run that you miscarried or that you had a cup of coffee that, you know, your pregnancy wasn't successful. And I think for many, many years, there's been this sort of blame, guilt, almost shame surrounding fertility. And we wanted to remove that and give you real information so that you could sort of take away the blame that you were feeling.
Do you focus primarily on fertility? I know that's your area of specialty, but do you also try to help women understand sort of a broader health perspective?
Truly MD is a broader concept. Our day-to-day practice is largely fertility based and what we call reproductive endocrinology. But truly, you know, we are a board certified OBGYNs and fertility specialists. And so we want to take our dialogue that women are very receptive to, and we speak on, you know, from a young girl first entering into womanhood and her first menses all the way until the last menses. So we want to, again, educate across that span.
There's a almost an automated process that we humans go through where we just kind of follow these almost invisible guardrails in terms of how we behave, and not until something happens that we seek advice, and it's often from the wrong sources. That moment in time, right, when you've been trying and you've tried everything and you just pull your hair out, you don't know what to do. I mean, you know, it's extremely difficult. And there's so many weird and brilliant ideas for how you solve that. I remember I read this article once about this doctor who had this theory that if you want to get pregnant, you just have to follow the herds of North Africa, and if you eat a lot of meat, you will eventually become pregnant. And if you just see how, yeah, how women in the Northern African tribes they all got pregnant during the rainy season, because all the animals came, you know, up for the rain, and then when the dry season came, the animals disappear and no one gets pregnant.
Right, yeah. Because it'll be, yeah. It's true. So they're malnourished.
Yeah. No, it's
malnourished. Yeah. Well, then you have all these people that are vegetarians, you know, so they have lack of protein in their bodies.
Absolutely. 100% with protein. And so the big question is, does it have to be animal protein? And so that's where, you know, there's some controversy and research going on. But, you know, clearly there's people who are vegan who get pregnant all the time.
And Shiva and I joke, we always say the older we get, the more Eastern we become, because I mean, Western medicine, you're trained like, this is your pill, this is your x-ray, this is your shot. But actually, in the past couple of years, we've met some great like acupuncturists, people who are into meditation, and we really incorporated that into our practice, because I think we really would do better if we merged the Western and the Eastern, because there's a lot to both sides. And so we work with a bunch of acupuncturists who we work in concert with nutritionists, and we joke around about that we've sort of shifted.
Yeah, we've become way more Eastern. But again, it's this, you know, concept of overall wellness and health. Western medicine is organ-based, is what they call it. It's each system. It's like you look at the brain, you look at the brain. You look at the stomach, you look at the stomach. And, you know, reproduction, you look at the uterus and the ovaries. And so, you know, there's the person as a whole. And again, this, I don't know if this is, this may just be Jamie and I don't know that this is like a generational thing, yeah. But I do think within medicine that this is also one of the shifts in medicine a little bit too, with Western medicine. It's not, you know, so Western anymore. Yeah.
With your movement and your passions, how do you connect with women before they have an urgent issue to deal with?
I think, I mean, we're, as subspecialists, we often see women who have been referred here after there has been some sort of issue or difficulties. But we hope that with Truly, we're getting to you before that you ever even need us or may see us. And that was why we decided to go broad, to talk to you when you're thinking about contraception or you're thinking about, you know, pap smears, as well as when you're thinking about how you're going to, if you're not successful trying to conceive. So that's why we went broad. We had, you know, people advise us along the way. And some of the advice was, you're going too broad, you should sort of narrow it. And we didn't take that advice. And we sort of thought, well, no, let's do what we think is the right, or what we think is sort of true to us, which is talking to women at all stages of their reproductive life.
I mean, there must be a lot of questions that circulate in people's minds, even with you know, progressive people who have education around women's health. I'm sure there's a lot of different roads you could go down and have very different points of view. So it raises lots of questions, particularly with the internet now, where you can find, I'm sure, all sorts of information.
Right.
Most of it probably not accurate or inaccurate. I would assume that the starting point, obviously, is moments throughout life, life stages, you know, when your body's changing, you know, whether you're going from child to womanhood, you know, you're becoming 13 years old, or when you're first faced with your college exams, or you're studying in medical school and you're stressed out, and how do you deal with your body and your mind? And then, of course, at some point, you having a steady sex life, you know, how do you manage your body in that situation? Of course, having a baby. Immediately at that stage, women become truth junkies. You know, the minute you find out that you're pregnant, you become this huge seeker of information. And all of those phases, you know, people are trying to figure stuff out. How do I navigate this situation in my life? And many times it's hormonal, so you're also super emotional. So it seems like a really, really big, really, really interesting movement to be a part of.
For a lot of women, they can go to their doctor and ask medical questions, but there's always been such firm lines between kind of medicine to then real life. And so the other, you know, I think factor between Jamie and I, we're doctors with medical degrees, we're also women, we're moms, and we have careers, and we're trying to figure it out as well. And so part of our movement is to be just brutally honest about our personal lives and how do we juggle it all. There were so many things when I was pregnant that I just learned from being pregnant, not from being a doctor, or nothing that I could find in a textbook. And so it's this unique ability to kind of combine the science, the textbook, to real life, and to be open and share that with other women. You know, we always say you're stronger together than you are alone. And, you know, Jamie and I do many things together because we kind of push each other and we give each other the courage to make some big decisions and to shake things up. And, you know, that same energy is part of our movement. You know, we're very big on, we want women to help each other and to be allies to each other. And unfortunately, all too often, that doesn't seem to happen.
I think on the heels of what Shiva's saying is community. We really want to build a community where women feel comfortable with sharing their emotions. And we felt like it had to start with us. So on the site, we both shared very personal experiences that were raw. And we felt that if we shared that, that would evoke a sense of community and let be almost a safer space. But it is true. I mean, a lot of times women, we don't support one another. And this was a way to sort of evoke community and allow people to have a safe place to come and talk.
Can you share one of the stories that you have shared on the website?
I wrote a piece talking about body image, which is something that I think many women struggle with, and my own struggles with it and how I dealt with it, not only, you know, in college days, but in pregnancy. I think pregnancy is often viewed for, you know, it's a beautiful process, right? It's bringing life into this world, but it can be very, very hard to watch your body change, particularly when you've dealt with body image and eating issues in the past. So I think all too often we don't talk about that and we don't recognize, and we say, well, you should be so happy that you're pregnant and you're this and that. So I spoke about what it was like to be pregnant, to watch my body change, and then also postpartum, because in the postpartum period, it doesn't go back to normal immediately. And I think that's also very difficult. You're no longer pregnant, but you're still not yourself. Add to that sleep deprivation and the mood swings. And my goal was to say it's okay if you don't like the way you look, because it's not all feeling wonderful all of the time.
That's really great advice. I like the idea of sort of a safe space, you know, where you can come and you can share stories and the community. Obviously, I can see the power, not just value, but just the huge benefit of being with people who have wisdom to share. Because I guess as you go through all these stages, whatever they may be, especially after childbirth, is very, as a father of two boys, I'm sure my wife went through many stages of blaming herself for things. Yeah. It's some of it, I think, is social, you know, society yeah. places blame on or makes you at least feel a certain way. And then, of course, women also can be quite bad at putting blame on other women.
Right.
I think historically, which needs to change. Do you have a set of principles that you believe that, let's say, your movement is built on? So you talked about honesty. Are there other values you think are super important for your for the Truly MD? And what does the name come from?
Some of kind of our principles. So honesty, truth, real.
Real is a big one.
That's yeah. a big one. We, you know, we this is real. And so the name Truly MD evolved, you know, over time, a lot of talking and back and forth with each other. And it truly, in many, you know, in many ways means honesty and truth. We are MDs, we are medical doctors. So we wanted to get that out there as well. I think, you know, a lot of current information sites and movements that are out there are sort of, again, a division. Like there's mommy sites and there are people trying to build mom communities. And then there's strict sites like a WebMD that are just, you know, purely kind of medical information that's out there. And so we wanted a combination, a name that would sort of also illustrate that we're a combination of those two worlds coming together.
Name was not easy. Who knew that picking a name would be so actually difficult? But when we really, yeah. we did a word game, I guess you would say, when we really looked at the words that we felt represented our movement, it was truth. And that we were going to be true to you, you know, true with our information. We wanted you to be true to yourself, and that we would try and give you basically, you know, our honest opinion medically and sometimes personally yeah. about different issues.
When you started Truly and put up this wonderful website, it just blossomed. Was it the, like literally take off the next day? How did you get your first contact?
This idea has been blossoming in our minds and for many years. And the writing started about two years ago. And so, you know, it's really been homegrown. Yeah. It's us. And we're doctors.
I mean,
we're not designers.
Yeah. yeah. And I'd be like, oh, wow, we should talk about this and we should write a blog about this. So we sort of collected the blogs for 2 years almost.
Yeah.
And before we really were able to go and put, you know, put it into the website format, I think that has been sort of the hardest part is the website design, the social media. We, as physicians, we're definitely not, we don't do a lot of social media. So that has been definitely probably right. our biggest challenge.
And it's also a generational thing as well. I think, you know, given, you know, Jamie's late 30s, I'm early 40s. This whole world out there, social media is really, it's a little past us. Like yeah. an email came out when I was in college. So, but we really just kind of launched and very organically, it's slowly growing via just social media contacts, you know, I mean, just putting it out there on social media. So it's just, again, homegrown and organic.
And when you first started getting people contacting you, how did you feel? Like, did it all sort of start at once? Was there like an avalanche of people, or how did it actually start?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, so we had like an email contact on there, and so you kind of, you post, and then all of a sudden you get all these likes or all these comments and all this positive reinforcement, and then personal emails coming to us. You know, had an Olympic athlete who emailed us who said, thank you so much yeah. for writing that exercise during pregnancy is okay, and sending pictures of her training for the Olympics. So it's really, it's just, I mean, you need that positive reinforcement because
to keep going.
Yeah. You're like, somebody's listening to me. This is yeah. making sense for somebody.
Yeah, it's true.
And huge, you know, and when you get these like personal messages or little you know, comments on social media that are like, you know, I was sort of going down a negative spiral and I read your piece and it really made sense or it answered questions for me. You know, that's, I think for us, that's just huge that it's all worth it. You know, if anything that we're writing is helping somebody else out there, then we keep going.
Yeah. We thrive off of making people better or making people well, or for us, you know, making people pregnant, it's that positive event. So in many ways, truly is sort of the same thing in that if we know that it's helping people or they are deriving some comfort or solace or even being empowered, then I think it motivates us. All right, let's keep going. We are helping, you know, we are touching people's lives.
So the healthcare sector has gone through, you know, massive shifts over the decades. Can you describe it today versus when you, I guess, graduated from medical school?
I think for us, we probably, because we spent so many years in training, our post-medical school was about 7 years training. We weren't around for, I guess, what it was, what, you know, the doctors that trained us talked to us about, they always talk about the way medicine used to be.
Right.
We probably didn't grow up in that model as much. We've seen residency training change quite a bit in the sense that residency used to be boot camp, you know, you're there 100 plus hours a week, we don't care what happens to you, just go for it. Now there's a lot of rules in how residents are changed and there's 80 hour work weeks and there's restrictions. So we can speak to the change in how physicians are trained. But I think the way that healthcare has gone has less, we've seen less of a change because that's always been the model that we have, that we've known. Our field is a little bit remote from things like, you know, the way the nationalized healthcare system or things like that, we don't, that doesn't impact us as much.
Specifically when it comes to the fertility practice side of things.
Yeah.
But in terms of like the psychology of it though, like, I mean, obviously the idea that you can have almost a coach or you're alongside your patients is significantly different than it would have been 10 years ago.
100%. And we, you know, I always say sort of our generation, meaning Jamie and I, our generation of doctors, and then we look to sort of the generation above us who trained us and how they practice. And so this is, again, where, you know, Jamie and I are like, we're different. The dialogue is different. It's a two-way conversation rather than a one-way conversation. Right. And, you know, no question is off limits.
Right.
And the patient has every right to question, challenge anything that I may say or recommend. And that's the way it should be. That's
for
how it
better
should be.
Or worse. I mean, sometimes medicine, it's you know, Google is great, but Google is also terrible, right? Because then people are self-diagnosing themselves and there's almost sometimes too much information. And there always should be a two-way street, but we live in the email generation, right? So we are always attached to our phones. Our patients can always contact us. Doctors 30 years ago, that was never the case. You know, nobody called them on their cell phone or emailed them. And I think that there's pluses and there's minuses. I do think a lot of the changes, particularly in the field of obstetrics, has probably come from women sort of taking over the field of obstetrics. I think that the addition of women to medicine has probably changed a lot of the way that medicine is delivered. That, and this is not to knock men at all, but there was a lot of old school paternalism that I don't think exists with women as much. And that sort of women are more, there's more group practices now that women are in place, that solo obstetrician really doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
There's women, there's sort of these more group practices. And maybe even a little bit of a softer side of medicine has come from having more female physicians.
I think it's a future-proof approach because, you know, there's been a lot of talk lately of the impact of automation in, you know, in artificial intelligence and the impact it's going to have in lots of sectors. And one sector that's been talked about is medicine, how, you know, basically artificial intelligence should be able to diagnose much more consistently. But one of the things that artificial intelligence can't do, obviously, is to provide creative ideas and to be able to have the coaching effect that you are bringing to this. That's quite unique. So I think it's definitely a future-proof idea.
Right.
Do you have any advice for, let's say, young women who may be listening to this, thinking of a career in medicine?
I think if this is something that you're passionate about, I think it's an intensely rewarding career. It is obviously not an easy road, even though residency hours are more restricted now than they maybe were 10 to 20 years ago. But it's not an easy road. And many of the fields of medicine are still very male dominated. And some particular fields are, I would say, are very, very difficult to pursue and still have families. Mm-hmm. There are certain surgical specialties that are just extremely time intensive. And so I tell women that you have to be kind of know what you want and know what you want in life and know what's important for you. And then you have to really consider that when planning what particular field of medicine that you want to go into. Because again, some of them have much friendlier overall lifestyles, and some are really just 90% of your life will be your work. Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, I think it's an amazing field for women because I think, you know, many of us naturally are very giving. We like to talk, and that's really, and we like to listen, and that's really important, doctor.
Do you think, I mean, I have friends who are surgeons and healthcare professionals, doctors in Sweden, and they seem to have a really quite a good life,
right,
life balance. Do you think that some of the challenges are perhaps less around the areas and more around that there's a lack of systems and structures to support a humane living style for women and also men, like parents? Rather than, like, it feels like more of an antiquated system where you have to give up your, you know, either you take a career or you take a family.
Yeah.
I don't see why you can't do both.
100%.
Yeah, I think that we have molded our personal practices so that we can be moms. And we've been fortunate enough to work with partners and be able to
mold
our career. But I think there's still a lot of areas in medicine where it's almost impossible to do that as a woman. So, I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, you can do whatever you want to do, but I think that, and it's funny because if you would have told me this at 22 and said, well, whatever, I'm going to do it, I'll be fine. But after having kids, I realized that you do have to modify your life, and you really can't do it all. But I think the most important thing is partnerships. Who you choose for your life partner, who you choose for your partners at work, really will be will determine, I think, how well you can do it and if you can do what you want to do, because we don't do any of this alone. You know, you don't raise your kids alone. You don't come to work alone. So you really have to be, it's really important to know who you're going to pick to surround yourself with.
Big question back to Truly MD. What do you want to change in the world?
I think we want to start out with, like, when girls are young, we want them to understand their bodies.
Yeah.
That's like the most important thing. If you understand your body from an early age, you will respect that body.
Yeah.
And you will treat it well over time, and you will make the best decisions possible for your reproductive health.
I mean, and that's exactly what you get one body, you know, and I think that 100%. If you know it, if you understand it, you will be empowered to make changes that are appropriate, and you will, you know, you will really respect yourself. And I think if we can give women a voice by giving them education, then they will ultimately have more respect for themselves down the road.
Can you give us an example of how you're doing this effectively?
Well, I think by putting pen to paper and getting it out there, getting our message out there in any way we can, we're trying our, you know, our best to sort of spread this. We also are trying to speak to women when they're younger, talk about, you know, respecting your body at a younger age. And I think that message will then translate for the future.
You know, obviously we're experiencing a social shift here in the United States. Also, a change in the way people think about women, you know.
Yeah.
How do you describe your movement against this broader social climate? You know, a new president, the thinking around healthcare, and the change of Obamacare and all that. I mean, everything seems to be in flux. So how do you see all of this change and the social climate affecting your movement?
You know, truthfully, like, let's just, like, keep it at the basics, you know? Let's keep it about, like, the movement and the site is really about, again, like, let's talk about what's real. Let's talk about the day-to-day. Let's, you know, let's learn about our bodies. Let's talk about day-to-day struggles. And we're, I think, again, there's so much flux going on outside. There's positive, there's negative. And again, we're trying, you know, we have our own personal political, you know, religious beliefs. Like we you know, we have our own personal beliefs, and we want to try to keep that to ourselves, because we want to kind of make this a safe space for every woman who's out there, no matter what she believes in or doesn't believe in. And so I think that, you know, I think sometimes, like, it's like we get lost in, like, the what ifs and what can happen. And I'm just very much a realist, and there's so much flux going on around me that I'm like, okay, I'm just going to trudge for, you know, every day, put one foot in front of the other and do what I know how to do and do it as best as I can. And I think this movement in our site is a reflection of that. And, you know, this is where Jamie and I can shine. This is where we can help where we can help other people and educate other people. And, you know, again, being true to yourself, I think that's really important in a time like now, when so many things are changing. And
I mean, I think it is frightening. I mean, we are not immune to the news. We're not immune to what our colleagues go through who live in, you know,
other places.
In a way, yeah. We realize that we live in a bubble. You know, we both grew up in New York. We've spent our whole lives here. And so we take for granted the, I think the freedoms and the openness that we have here. And so I think sometimes we forget. And obviously we make modern families, we say, right? I mean, we help patients who make the families that they always dreamed of, whether it's two men, two women, a man and a woman. We're, you know, that to us is, it doesn't really matter. It's sort of whatever you want. And we recognize that we are somewhat protected living where we are. So our message hopefully translates further so that people do understand that there are possibilities to do whatever it is that you want to do.
If you're talking to people wherever they may be across America, and you were describing a modern family, how would you describe it?
Family is what you wanted to be. We talk about this with couples every day, because we see women who have gone into ovarian failure at a young age, or men who have no sperm, or you make your own family. And that white picket fence, you know, with the 2.1 child and the dog, it doesn't really exist anymore. And you drive that, whether it be you want to have, you know, whether you're having a child with donor sperm or donor egg, or someone else is carrying the pregnancy. At the end of the day, to be a mother or to be a father, when that child comes into your life, however they come into your life, that's the true test in how you raise that child. That's parenthood. I don't really think parenthood is if it's your egg, your partner's sperm, if you carry the pregnancy. I mean, pregnancy is sort of the easy part of raising a child, right? It's once they are here and you have to teach them and grow them and help them become good people in society. So I think helping people let go of maybe what that prototypical family looks like, and saying your modern family is whatever you choose it to be.
I mean, my vision of the modern family is one of love, support, nurturing, and, you know, however way, shape, or form you create that, that's what it should be, right? And if that's how the next generation, you know, is, I think probably this world will be a much better place at some point.
100%. And that's our job, is to help people get there and make it possible.
Just a side note, I was reading an article in the New York Times, I think it was last week, that said that most Hillary supporters were watching Modern Family, and most Trump supporters watched The Voice.
We definitely have a favorite in our house. I won't say which one it was, yeah. But we watched one of those very consistently, actually. Yep.
Yep. Just in closing, I would love to hear if you could describe the feeling, you know, you have when you see a baby for the first time. And you've been through the whole journey, you know, the tears, the disappointments, the bumps in the road, the hitting the walls, the defeatism, the blamism, all that stuff. And then eventually when you see success, however you define it,
right?
How do you feel about that?
I think one of the best times is when patients will often send us their Christmas cards at like holiday season. And I can't tell you how many times I'm like brought to tears because it's really amazing. And that is the most incredible part of what we do as doctors is really helping people live their dream. And when you get those cards, it reminds you of the work that you do. It reminds you of your positive impact on patients and on other people. And I think there's so much joy in that it's sort of a lot of times it can help you deal with all of the negativity.
Right. You see these pictures and you see these babies and you're like, okay, this is the hope and this is the good in the world.
Yeah.
And so it's constant reminder of like how important that is to recognize that. You know, because it's, I think, very easy to just, you know, the world can be really negative. And so it's just such an amazing reminder of what is good and what is hope and what is the future.
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I don't think I've ever met anyone who works in your field who is so calm and so thoughtful as you, Jamie and Shiva. So innovative and fresh.
Thank you so much.
Really great.
Thank you for joining our uprising today and listening to our show. If you missed the show, or if you want to find out more about who was on, or if you want to learn more about how to create your own uprising, please go to uprisingmovements.com. You can also download this uprising program from iTunes. Uprising was produced by Nicola Keneally and Adam Helen, with special help from Melanie Boardman, Karen Drakenberg, Philippa Freeman, Brianna Campbell, Fashad Faroudi, Mark Bruzzi, Will Isom, James Politi, and Jonathan Weeks. My name is Scott Goodson, and you've been listening to Uprising. What we can learn about movements and uprisings that are shaping our world in business, in society, and in between. For more on cultural movements and movement marketing, be sure to pick up a copy of the best-selling book Uprising, How to Build a Brand and Change the World by Sparking Cultural Movements, available on Amazon.com.
Music for Uprising composed by Charles Duchateau.